Welcome to the Tyee Fellowship Podcast. I'm Catherine Gretzinger. Today I'm talking to Dave Olson. His series on making transit fare free is on the Tyee right now at thetyee.ca. Dave has always been fascinated by efficiency. He likes to figure out the way things work. That's why bicycles, for him, are simply the most efficient of all vehicles. Now, efficiency is something that's on many people's minds right now because of things like traffic congestion and pollution and even global warming. But when Dave had an accident on his bike and he actually couldn't ride, he realized just how many people there are that can't ride bicycles. So that made him start thinking more about transit. About a decade ago, he found out something that surprised him. There was something in the world called fare-free transit. In the first installment of his three-part series, Dave gets on his bike and heads down to Whidbey Island in Washington State. It's been fare-free from day one. He then takes us on a virtual and carbon-free tour of what he calls the shining star of the fare-free transit world. That's in Hasselt, Belgium. That city pulled fare boxes from their buses back in 1997, and since then, their ridership has soared. Now, research and writing wasn't enough for Dave. His work also imagines what Vancouver could be like if people have to stop paying for transit and actually just get to climb on and ride for free. We're going to find out about all of this as Dave joins me now in the studio. Hi there.
Hi.
So, what is fare-free transit?
Well, it's really what you described, taking the fare boxes out of the buses. We already own those buses. It's public transit, publicly owned transit, and what it does is it allows people to get on faster, and it allows us to collect the funding for the systems in a much more efficient manner.
How did you cotton on to this? Where did it come from?
Well, I wish I remember. I don't really truly remember where the idea came from. But as soon as I heard it or got it or whatever, I've been stuck on it since because it just makes so much sense and I don't see it not benefiting anyone.
Tell me a little bit about the experiments that you were able to go and witness.
Well, down at Whidbey Island, like you mentioned, it's paradise. It really is for a transit user. Buses are commercial free. There's no ads on the outside. There's no ads on the inside. You don't need a schedule because you can just jump on and off at will. And all the drivers are just incredibly friendly, or at least the ones I dealt with.
So removing the fare boxes had an impact on people as well as on the economics of running a transit system?
Well, every person that I spoke to outside of the transit system down there, when I asked them about the transit system that they have there, the first thing they said is, "We love it." And we love it because it's free. So it was overwhelming. It wasn't just a mild response to that question. It was always a very strong, very powerful, yes, we love it, we love it because it's free.
Now, did it start there as an experiment, Dave, or was this an agenda that somebody set?
Well, my understanding is the very first executive director really embraced the concept and researched it and discovered that it's more cost efficient to run their system free than it is to put fare boxes in, because collecting money is very expensive. The next executive director, who took over a year after the system began in 1987, she's been there ever since, Martha Rose, and she is quite a guardian of the system. It's amazing. She's an amazing steward, always thinking of innovative ways to improve all aspects of the system, including minimizing water use and expanding it as funding allows. And it's truly great. It's really a great system.
Is the agenda environmental for them, or was it something else that compelled them to do this?
It was economic, absolutely. And certainly the environmental aspect is huge. People have no excuse not to take their car, although given the size of their system, it's comparable to Nanaimo's in terms of population served and distances and whatnot. The frequency of service is lower than it could be to be ideal, so that you really don't need a car. But it's still free. It still gets you absolutely everywhere you want. If you're a commuter to Seattle or suburbs of Seattle from Whidbey Island, which many of their users are, you don't need a car because they work with the ferry system. They have priority to the ferry and priority from the ferry. So you're guaranteed to get on your ferry if you get on that free bus.
What's their ridership like?
It's remarkable. It's packed. They're just buying another half a dozen new buses that are bigger because the buses they have are already maxed out, and they're doubling up on their runs because they just have such a huge demand.
So how do they pay for their transit system if they're not collecting money from the people who use it?
It's very simple. They have a not even a whole 1%. It's 0.6 of 1% of the sales tax on all products sold in their county go to the transit system. So for $100, if you go to a local store and spend $100, that translates into 60 cents towards the transit system. You pay a tax of 60 cents for every $100 that you spend in that county, and it goes directly to the transit system.
Now, most transit systems in North America, at least, run deficits. What are they doing in terms of their bottom line? How's it looking?
Well, they're not in the hole, that's for sure. When I was there, I'm also have a consultant's mind, so I was encouraging them to increase their funding because they still have room to increase the sales tax legally. It's all legislated by their state. And I was just pushing, increase your funding so you can expand your frequency. Because during Monday to Friday, they have great frequency. Saturday is not so great, and Sunday they don't run. So obviously, for people that need to travel on Sunday, it's not an option. And so that's why I was really pushing them to increase their funding even further.
So you're considering yourself now a bit of a champion of this whole idea.
Well, it's just so, all-consuming, I guess, because it just makes so much sense. It's like, you've got it, make it even better. And when I went to Hasselt online, it was like, whoa, I can't believe how much even better it can be.
Okay, take me there. How did you do this research virtually?
Well, email and online with web browsing and a phone interview or two, actually, because they really are the shining star in the sense that everybody who knows about Fare Free knows about Hasselt because they've influenced virtually every other town or city that has become Fare Free. They've inspired them. They've been the model. And they keep growing. It's amazing. It truly is.
Now, this is a city that actually had a pay fare program
yes.
in place.
Yes.
What made them decide to try Fare Free?
Well, in 96, they realized that things needed to change. They were about to build a third ring road freeway around their town. It's a town of or city of 300,000 in Limburg province, which is a fairly dense province, and there's lots of commuter traffic coming through it and to it. So it was quite industrial. It was quite congested. It was extremely congested. So they were going on what every other city had done up to that point, which was build more roads. Well, they got an innovative mayor and an innovative council, and they said, hold on, let's look at this. Let's look at the big picture. They got some funding. They did a study. They looked at pedestrian facilities, biking facilities, transit facilities, and car parking facilities, as well as car lanes. And they came up with a big plan, a whole picture. And part of that plan, and it was only a small part of that plan, was to take fare boxes out of the buses to encourage people to get on.
And?
Well, the ridership exploded. In the 10 years since, it's gone up 1,000%, 10 times as many people ride it. The next year, within a year, they had doubled their ridership.
Now, surely that's not just because they removed the fare boxes. There's got to be a whole other plan behind it.
Exactly. Well, that's what they recommended to me in the interviews, which was you need to have a well-thought-out plan. You can't just take the fare boxes out because who knows what's going to happen. But if you plan for it well, it's going to work very well. And what they did was they increased their bus service before they took out the fare boxes so that they could meet the demand that they knew was going to grow when they did take the fare boxes out. They've always been challenged by capacity, of course, because a good used system is going to be full. But they keep developing. They buy more buses constantly, and they're changing a lot of their bus routes to tram routes because of the huge demand.
And that's affordable for them?
It's very affordable. They have a different approach to transit, too, or a slightly more efficient way than it seems we do here in BC, in that they have a public corporation called Delinge. I'm not sure if I pronounce that correctly. And they run most, if not all, of the major transit systems in the country. So the federal government is very actively involved. They actually fund 75% of Hasselt's budget, and the other 25% comes directly from property taxes. So it's very simple to fund, very, very simple. And Delinde, the operator, has advantages in that they can mix and match their buses. They can take buses from other locations if they're low, if some break down, or if they have just excess demand for a certain short period of time in a certain town. So they can really, really take advantage of the fact of their large scale, as well as buying in bulk, too.
So we're talking about sort of a small example in Whidbey Island and a medium sort of sized example if we're in Belgium.
Yes.
The big city.
Yeah.
You're imagining that Vancouver could actually take on something like this.
Absolutely.
Tell me how.
Well, again, it would take a little bit of work, but not a lot. And it's not rocket science here. San Francisco is perhaps going to lead the way. Their mayor, who's been innovative in so many ways.
Plastic bags, et cetera.
Homelessness. Oh, my goodness, they're treating people like people there. He's instructed his staff to look at the cost of collecting fares for transit there, and with the idea that they could go fare-free. So they want to see how much money they actually get out of the fare box. The crazy thing about the systems in BC, actually anywhere in the northwest part of North America, is nobody knows how much it costs to collect the fares.
What do you mean? Somebody must know.
Nobody does. It's incredible. I asked every staff person I could find in every system in BC, and everyone said, well, we don't collect that information, or we don't know, or we guess that it's 2% or it's 10% or it's whatever percent of this or that. It's amazing. Can you imagine a business or a co-op, you know, running and not knowing how much it costs to collect money? They wouldn't last very long, and that probably explains why all our transit systems are in perpetual poverty in this province.
Now, the systems that you talk about as being ideal are ones that are largely buses. In Vancouver, we've got a very expensive rapid transit system with this SkyTrain, and it's ever expanding.
Yes.
We've got a highway system that moves the bulk of people in and out of the city.
Yes.
How do you think this could be paid for, given what we've got so far?
Well, there's at least $2.5 billion earmarked for the Gateway Project.
This is the expansion of the highway plan to increase bridge access and everything else.
Yeah, twin the Portman and build new highways in South Surrey and other parts of the Lower Fraser Valley. We have how many billions for the Olympics? BC Ferries is now spending $2.5 billions of our dollars on bigger ferries for more cars. There's lots of money out there. The provincial government has a $2 billion excess right now, so surplus. So there's lots of money. And what I'm trying to push for is a more efficient way of funding the operating costs as well as the capital costs. So there's no question. If we take fare boxes out of our system, we're going to have a huge increase in demand that simply can't be met right now. The U-Pass here at UBC and SFU.
Hugely popular.
Oh, great example of why this will work. Because people have a pass, they use it, and they love it, except for the overcrowding, because TransLink didn't plan properly for the U-Pass.
But in reality, this would require a tax increase. People are already getting hit with property taxes, school taxes are going up, everything. How would you sell this to citizens?
Well, the citizens in Hasselt, they have no complaints. Everybody I talked to, no complaints. And it wasn't just transit people that I talked to. It's 1% of their municipal budget goes to transit. 1%, that's it. So what I've been actually advocating in Vancouver is that businesses, because businesses obviously deal with money, they have money, they will benefit hugely if their employees and their customers have better access to transit. It's just a given. It happens everywhere in the world. Better transit means more business. So if they benefit, let's have them pay for the bulk because they have money. And you know how much it would cost a day for an employee to travel on transit? $1 a day. That's it. If the employer paid for it, if every employer paid $1 a day for every person that came to their workplace, it would right now, it would double TransLink's budget.
The biggest complaint that people have, though, about transit is access. People say it's much easier for me to jump in my car because I get where I'm going when I want to get there. How do you, off the top, satisfy that demand so that people do buy in and say, okay, this is a worthwhile project. I don't mind if my taxes float up a little bit to absorb this because it's giving me the efficiency that I need in my life.
Well, that goes a bit beyond the fare free idea, and that's fine because what we need to do that, period. And one way to do that is to dedicate road space to buses, bus lanes. And of course, back to the adding more buses to the system. We just have to buy more buses.
I'm back to thinking about you and thinking about efficiency at the beginning of our conversation.
Right.
Why is this idea such an important focus for you as a cyclist and as a citizen?
Well, again, it's all about efficiency, economic efficiency. Collecting fares is so inefficient. It's so expensive to collect fares. There was a study done in Washington State that showed that every small system, like Nanaimo's, for instance, actually pays more money, or at least doesn't make any money from the fare box. They pay money to collect fares. Like, it costs the system money to collect the fares. So not very efficient at all. In Vancouver, we do get some money out of the fare box just because of the huge volumes. But it still costs a lot of money, and TransLink is continually criminalizing sharing transfers and preventing people from reselling. Where else is that happening in our society? It's a capitalist society. People have something that has value. We're allowed to sell it. Well, not in TransLink's system. So there's all this energy and money being poured into the transit system to make it more difficult to use and more expensive to use. Well, let's redivert that energy and that money, and let's make it easier to use by taking the fare boxes out. So that's one reason, the economic side. The ease of use, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, right? You don't have to pay. You just get on. You can get on any door, and you can get off any door.
Would it make you ride transit more?
Absolutely, I would, for sure. Not a lot more, because, again, I cycle, and it's so much easier for me. But there are many situations where, you know, oh, it'd be a blessing to be able to use transit. And it would make it more equitable in society.
We hinted at your activism around this whole thing. Where do you go next? I mean, you had trouble getting answers for people, so you've found a way to dig out some of this research and stuff. What are you going to do with it all?
Well, I'm not totally sure. I would love to be able to apply this knowledge now in a real sense in helping systems become fare free. Again, there's a little bit of planning to be done, but not a lot. And most systems could go fare free easily within a year, without question, and very successfully so. So it's really probably a political game right now still. The places that have gone fare free, it's the politicians that have driven it. And, you know, with three levels of right-wing governments right now, it's not looking positive for us. But that can all change.
Well, people can read about your ideas and some of the research on the Taiyi right now. Dave, thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Catherine.
Dave Olson is a local writer. He is the recipient of a Taiyi Fellowship in Solutions-Oriented Journalism. You can read all about his fare-free transit ideas at thetaiyi.ca.